You're listening to the Buckeye Visualist Podcast Show.
Welcome to a very special episode of the Buckeye Visualist Podcast. I'm your host, Lori King, and joining me as co-host is my friend Sue Morrow, who is my co-host on NPPA's The Visual Voice. It's June 20th, and not only is today my daughter's 27th birthday, happy birthday, Quinny. Today I'm at the Ohio Inn Hotel and Event Center in Lewis Center, Ohio, for the 75th Annual Ohio News Photographers Association Convention and Seminar. For three quarters of a century, ONPA has brought together photographers and videographers, editors and visual storytellers from across Ohio to celebrate great photojournalism, learn from industry leaders, and recognize the year's best work. This year's convention features an impressive lineup of speakers whose careers span newspapers, wire services, documentary filmmaking, and Pulitzer Prize-winning newsroom leadership. Throughout today's episode, we'll hear from some of those speakers, as well as the photographers whose work earned top honors in ONPA's annual contest. On the agenda today, the introduction of officers, acknowledgement of all past and present officers, three keynote speakers, and a fabulous raffle with great prizes. I actually am wearing one of my raffle winnings from a few years ago, a red ONPA t-shirt. I just want to take a moment and highlight the remarkable careers of our three speakers. For more than 30 years, Dale Amore, a two-time ONPA winner, worked in the newspaper industry before transitioning into video storytelling and filmmaking while operating his own media company. At a time when many photographers were being forced to adapt or leave the profession, Dale embraced new ways of telling stories. Amy Sanchetta, who actually is first up at the mic, spent three decades photographing some of the biggest news and sports stories in the world for the Associated Press. As the AP's U.S. national photographer, she traveled extensively, documenting everything from championship celebrations to major breaking news events. Her career offers a fascinating look at the demands of a woman working for one of the world's largest news organizations, which has traditionally been a man's world. Thank you for breaking a few glass ceilings, Amy. The headliner for today is my friend Katie Rausch, Assistant Managing Editor of Photography and Video at the Star Tribune in Minneapolis. Earlier this year, the Star Tribune won the Pulitzer Prize for breaking news reporting for its coverage of the mass shooting at the Annunciation Catholic School in Minneapolis. Katie, a former colleague of mine at the Toledo Blade, knows Ohio journalism well. Before helping lead one of the nation's most respected visual departments, she worked as a visual journalist at The Blade and the Jackson Citizen Patriot in Michigan. Today, she oversees teams of photographers and videographers while helping shape coverage of some of the most significant stories in the Midwest. Of course, no NPA convention would be complete without recognizing the best journalism produced across the Buckeye State during the past year. Today, photographers from large and small markets are being honored for their work that captures everything from breaking news and sports to intimate moments of everyday life. Toledo Blade's Jeremy Wadsworth has done it again. He is the winner of his second consecutive George S. Small Photographer of the Year title, and high school student Wesley Blackburn is the best of the small market. To read that story and see their work, go to the ONPA website at onpa.org. I also want to give a huge shout out to the ONPA officers who work so hard to keep ONPA alive and to make this 75th anniversary very special. Thank you, Kim Barth, the board chair, President Andrew Dolph, Treasurer Kristen Bauer, Sam Green, the still vice president, Chris Reese, the TV vice president, and Secretary Lisa Scalfaro. I know there's about to be a changing of the guard for these elected officers, so we all wish you well and enjoy that well-deserved free time. And good luck to the new crop of leaders. May ONPA last another 75 years and beyond. Okay, let's get to the interviews. First up at the mic is Amy Sanchetta. Thank you for being on the show.
I appreciate being here.
So you are from Moreland Hills, Ohio.
Yes, I live in the house I grew up in, actually.
Where is that?
Chagrin Falls area, east side of Cleveland, about 23 miles east of Cleveland.
Okay, so you covered Cleveland a long time, didn't you, for the AP?
No, I only did the last 10 years of my career because I started at AP in Philadelphia, for 10 years. And then I was the national photographer for 10 years, where I got to move back to Cleveland, but I worked from home doing national stories. And then I became one of the Cleveland photographers for 10 years. 10, 10, 10.
Amy, it's amazing to finally meet you.
It's wonderful to meet you.
Oh my God, it's about time, right?
Yeah, I feel like we had parallel careers, but never bumped into each other.
It's crazy. I've seen your byline come over the wire for a very long time. So it's an honor to finally sit here next to you. Thank you for being here.
Sure.
AP started in 1846, and you joined AP in what year?
1983. It was basically men, right? Men reporters, men photographers, men radio guys. So when I was hired in 1983, I was only the sixth woman photographer ever hired on staff at AP. That's a long time.
Did you meet any of those women who preceded you?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Suzanne Vlamas, who still worked for us in New York, and Kathy Willens, who worked for us in Miami. Madeline Drexler, who actually was one of the people that helped me when I was in college, get connected to the AP. When I was in college, she was the AP photographer in Cleveland, and she didn't last a long time. So she's probably number four. Suzanne was number one. 99% of the guys welcomed us with open arms. And then, you know, there's always those couple of rocks in the road that make it challenging. Can I give you an interesting example
yes, yes.
of how the men in photojournalism didn't really think that about there being women? Here's two examples. When I got my first internship after college, there was just two photographers at this little newspaper in Ohio. And when the photo editor was showing me around the darkroom, so I'm just a kid, I'm like 21. I'm looking around the top of the darkroom, and they had those old Snap-on parts posters on the wall with the girls in bikinis carrying like garage tools. And I was just very quiet because I was really shy, but he saw me looking up. And then he looked up, and we didn't mention it, and the next day they were all gone. He just didn't think about it, but then he did, because now there was a girl in his dark room. Or early on when I would travel, like on an assignment out west, I did a golf tournament in Colorado, I think, and the guys after the tournament, the day's work, and after going to dinner, they made sure that I got back to the hotel safe and sound, you know, got in, and then they went off. God knows what they did, but
that's great to hear. Similarly, I had some of those similar experiences too. I feel like I owe so much of my success to the people who came before me, and most of them were men, but a number of them were an amazing, strong group of women.
Yeah.
So we stand on their shoulders as well.
Absolutely. And one thing that I've done throughout my career, in fact, I did it today to one of our young women photographers at AP, because, boy, there's some women shooters now at AP that are just lights out. But I saw that one of them shot a World Cup soccer picture of a U.S. goal that was just, it couldn't have been better. So I sent her a note. She doesn't even know me. I don't even know her. I just said, that picture is perfect. Keep it going. So I like to elevate younger photographers, particularly the women, because I had some of that, but I didn't have as much of that. So
to get an email from Amy Sanchetta, that would be awesome.
I'll send you an email tomorrow.
Okay, good. Thank you. I've been waiting one for decades.
Well, you're so silly.
Do you know how many women have been AP photographers over the past over 100 years?
I don't know the total, but I don't think there were ever more than, I think our tops in the U.S., we had 110 photographers when we were really on our heyday. That's just in the U.S., and maybe, I don't think there was a time that there were more than six or seven. And then they would come and go, you know, we have so many more now, and in Europe, and in South America. I mean, we have a great group of women now all over the world, so.
Did you have to fight for assignments like being on the sidelines at a football game? What was that like?
I didn't. I took the assignments I was given. And I made good pictures, and I was a great teammate. You know, I was really helpful, and it was nice to have around, you know, and I didn't miss, really. And so I didn't have to fight for stuff. I wouldn't have known how to. I just took the assignments I was given. I always thought if you asked for assignment or bullied for assignment, you probably would blow it. That I'd rather take a bad assignment and make a great picture than bully for an assignment and then not have the thing happen or not produce. So I kind of like that challenge. There was a point in my career when I was the national photographer that I got a lot of assignments that the national writers were doing that weren't visual. because I could come up with something. And it was a challenge. I enjoyed it.
When did you retire from the AP?
I hurt my back in 2012. I had permanent nerve damage there, so I had to stop working. I was just in my mid-50s. So 2012.
Was it a work-related injury?
Yeah. I actually got hurt falling at the Olympics in Torino. I was covering a short track speed skating medal ceremony, and a little group of six of us, the pool, would get to walk out on the ice along the boards and kneel, you know, right in front of the podiums. And being competitive, I wanted to be the first person. And they would put down a little piece of carpet. They had a little pitcher, plastic pitcher of water. They put water on the ice, lay the carpet on it. It was supposed to stick. And I was the first person, and I took a big step, and the carpet wasn't sticking. And I landed on my 302.8 on my back, shot the ceremony still, got myself back to my housing that night, and then the next morning I couldn't stand up. So I spent the day in the Italian hospital, fractured rib, bruised kidney. I had a fracture in my spine, but they didn't see it. And so I took 2 days off, but it's the Olympics, and I didn't want to miss any, so I went back because it was figure skating. So I finished the games, got checked out when I got home. When it turns out that I damaged the fascia that connects your lat muscle to your spine, and I already have scoliosis. And so over the next 6 years, that fascia started to unravel, and I was carrying my gear into a then Cleveland Indians game, and it went, and it tore. It's very unpleasant.
Oh.
But I shot the game, sitting on my 600 case, because what are you going to do? And that was the last thing I shot. And that was the end of that.
Wow.
So, one big wrong step. It's a bummer, because I still was really loving it. I think I was, what was that, like 54, 55 years old? I had a lot to do still. I would love to have gone to the Olympics again. I would like to have done a lot of things again. But
one time I was shooting a hockey game, and I left a piece of equipment. It was a walleye playoff, and I left my computer in this area, but the Zamboni was blocking my entrance. So I thought, I'm just going to crawl underneath the bleachers and go get it and crawl back, because I love crawling and climbing. And I was really quick, just crawling, and all of a sudden something hit my head and it forced my neck back. There was a piece of metal sticking down and sliced my head right open.
Oh,
and I had to be taken to the hospital in an ambulance.
Oh,
and
gosh.
That was the last of me shooting that playoff game.
Holy
Jeremy
gosh.
Wadsworth actually had to come to the hospital, get my card, and go back and finish shooting the game.
Well, plus your head bleeds like a son of a gun.
Oh,
so it must have created quite a sight.
My hands were filled with blood, and I turned around, and there was the EMT guy standing right there. And I says, I think I need some help. Blood was running down my face. And they have me in a stretcher going through with a crowd of walleye fans.
I'm like, gosh.
And everybody thought, like, did you get hit with a hockey puck? I'm like, I wish.
Yeah.
No, that didn't.
That's
happen.
A better story.
Yeah, it's a way better story.
Amy, what did you love about your career? What made you do this?
My mom was an artist, so we had an artistic growing up. You know, our holiday presents were usually art projects, that kind of thing. So we had that visual sense, my siblings and I, and I was good at it. And I liked that every assignment I went to, every baseball game, it's kind of funny to think about it now. I mean, I probably shot thousands of baseball games. I thought something's going to happen today that's different. I'm going to get a triple play. I'm going to get a perfect game. I mean, of course, that never happened. Actually, I shot two triple plays, but usually nothing really very interesting happened in a baseball game. But it didn't keep me from the next night thinking, something really good is going to happen tonight, and I'm going to make that picture. So it's that thrill of catching that moment kind of kept me going. And my colleagues, I love the guys I work with and girls and the women I work with. I just had great people to be around. They were like family. I used to call it my road family. I had my home family, and I had my road family. So, I mean, that just kept it wonderful, too.
It's awesome. Thank you.
Last question. Do you have any advice for photographers of today?
You know, it's so funny. When I talk to students, I say, there is more desire for your content than ever before, ever. I just don't know how to make money at it, because I had a regular job with a pension and a 401k and dental, you know, but I don't know how you make money at it, but people want your work. And don't forget that. That's really my best suggestion. I keep plugging away at it. And honestly, be nice to people. It goes a long way.
Thank you very much for being on the show. We really appreciate it.
Sure, it was fun.
And I cannot wait to hear your talk today. Up next is Katie Rausch. She is our headliner for tonight. You work in Minneapolis, but you are from Michigan.
Yes, that's right.
You work at the Minneapolis Star Tribune. You're the assistant managing editor, photo and video. And you just won a Pulitzer. Your staff did,
Our
right?
staff did, yes.
Yeah, so you're the boss.
Yeah, I'm the head of the department.
You've had quite a fast track to the editor top. And I've watched you progress over the past few years where we were co-workers at the Toledo Blade and we would have some long conversations about the industry and where it was going. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and what got you into the field?
So I'm from mid-Michigan originally, and the Flint Journal was my hometown paper. When I was growing up, my aunt was a longtime reporter and then editor for the Flint Journal. And she would bring me down to the paper sometimes and would like, you know, I got to hang out with some of the people at the paper. And then when I went into high school, she was like, you should think about journalism classes. And I went to journalism camp and discovered photography and kind of never looked back. So I was in, you know, high school journalism and then college from, you know, the minute I stepped onto Michigan State's campus, I was in college doing journalism things. I traveled with the Michigan State football team to cover them for, you know, many, many years. I did things like covered Obama's first inauguration, Rosa Parks' funeral. I was, you know, had opportunities to be on the court for like the NCAA national championship. Like, you know, in those days, the student paper had money and was produced 5 days a week. And we worked about 40 to 50 hours. And so I transitioned into editing at the student paper and really loved it. And when I was graduating, I didn't know that you could go straight into editing. And I had at that point really fallen in love with photojournalism as well. So I went and had a couple of photographing positions. I'm really trying to get away from using the word shooting. Photographing positions. And the opportunity opened up to go to Denver. And it was very out of the blue. I was recruited for that position. I can't say thank you enough to Pat Traylor, who is the editor in Denver, and just absolutely changed my life. I mean, it's a small shop these days. And one of the positives of that is that you sort of get the opportunity to do a little bit of everything. So I ran assignments. I ran the daily news report. You know, I filled in on sports and would do Broncos coverage. We got to do, you know, national NBA championship, like the, you know, NHL championship. I mean, all these like really, really great, amazing editing experiences. And I, you know, met and worked with some just, like, I cannot say enough, just how phenomenal the staff of the Denver Post and the freelance community there in Denver is. We worked with a lot of freelancers, and so I was able to partner with a lot of them on projects, you know, really work on developing other people's stories in a way that was phenomenal. I skipped over this a little bit, I guess, but when I was in Toledo, I was involved in union leadership, and that was a really big part of what kind of solidified for me the desire to go into editing. Yeah, and so I was there in Denver for about 5 years through, you know, 2020 and COVID and the George Floyd uprising. And about 3 years ago, I was recruited to come to the Star Tribune. And in my capacity at the Star Tribune, of, you know, a couple of different iterations, like it's a paper that's undergoing a lot of, you know, change and growth right now. When I first joined, it was just myself and one other photo editor. So I was doing a lot of the very hands-on editing in those, you know, for those things. We have a staff of between 15 and 20 people on the photo side. Photo video. So it's a, you know, very, you know, large, robust staff at this point. And it was just a lot of material. And it was, I mean, such a delight, a lot of hard work, but such a delight to be able to, like, you know, directly edit with people, to do that kind of thing. And then as we've been able to kind of fill the ranks of photo editors out, I've transitioned more into the actual role, which is running the department. It's managerial. It's, you know, setting the visual vision for the department, the direction that we're going in, doing all kinds of things like, you know, pursuing new revenue streams, you know, trying to build out our video presence and strategy, looking for ways to meet our readership and grow our readership across multiple platforms and products. And a lot of really exciting things. It's a really exciting moment at the Star Tribune.
Your love for editing is music to Sue's ears.
How did you know?
Because I know you, my friend.
Yeah, as I sit here and listen to you talk, it's like, yeah, you know, we find our wheelhouses, right? And editing spoke to me, and that's what I've done most of my career, and that in design. So I'm really appreciating hearing more about your path. I've watched your path. Shout out to Pat Traylor, mm-hmm. Ohio University, go Bobcats. at the end of the day, Katie, you as an editor, you as the advocate, how do you keep your calm? How do you come back to your center? How do you stay balanced? Because you've got a lot going on in life, and all the news in Minneapolis and all, it's been a ton. So How do you maintain that level of sanity when you're leading a very large team through some very big things?
Plus a one-year-old child at home.
Preparation. I mean, I think part of it is that, you want to have good people around you. And I'm so lucky to have inherited this, amazing visual team from Deb Pastner, who was my predecessor at the paper. And, you know, we've been able to build out fantastic editing on our roster. And I think that both sort of being able to know that you can rely on really good people to do their jobs well and to, you know, like come in every day with professionalism and grace. That's irreplaceable, right? But the things that you can also control in a more direct way are that preparation. Do you have roles clearly laid out for people? Do you understand what you're going to do in, you know, difficult times? Are you prepared to handle, you know, hard questions and make difficult choices? I mean, it is essential as an editor and as a leader that you need to be a rock for the people who are calling and, you know, they're in a difficult situation. They need, you know, they need help. They need an answer. They need guidance immediately. And you have to give that, even if, you know, in situations where you might not know the answer. I think being calm and handling those things in a calm way is a pretty essential piece of editing effectively. Debriefs are really big, and that's something that, you know, I don't always do as much as I should. But debriefs, I think, are really, really important for individual stories, for projects, for these kind of big breaking news events like we've had, like really talking about, I mean, what was right? What could we do better? That's super, super helpful, because even if it's something like, you know, these big civil unrest pieces, you know, George Floyd was 6 years ago now. And so that's a 6-year gap where people haven't necessarily been doing that kind of work. And all of a sudden during Operation Metro Search, they were. You know, you really want to make sure that the knowledge that you gain by covering some of those events previously, you can learn from and add to and adapt when you come back into those situations, however long it might have been.
Given those huge news stories, when the shooting at Annunciation happened last fall, you were prepared.
My team was prepared. I was home with my daughter on maternity leave. So I had my daughter in June, and the shooting happened at the end of August. And so she was, you know, almost 4 months old at that point. I was preparing to come back to work. And I can't tell you, I mean, just how proud I am of the way that our team worked together, the like calm, the collectedness, the decisiveness of the editing crew, you know, the really, really professional way that all of the visual journalists responded to this horrible event. And I think one of the things to really highlight is that this is a church, and this is a church community that has a lot of ties. We in the newsroom have a lot of ties too. There are just a lot of people who either, you know, have been there, know people there. One of our editors had children who were attending the school on that day, you know, and so for us, this is really personal. And, you know, I'm really, really proud of the work that we did around the breaking news coverage. But also, I will say, I think in some ways more proud of the trust that we've been able to earn with members of that community for the follows that we've done, which have been really extensive and very deep. And I'm, you know, very grateful for the people in the Annunciation community who have, you know, trusted us and gifted us with their stories and their time and their perspectives.
You're the headliner speaker tonight. Can you give us a glimpse into what you're going to be talking about?
Well, I thought it might be good to sort of go back through some of my photojournalism and inflict that on everybody. And then, you know, show some of the project work and just sort of the progression of things that, like, you know, I'm personally interested in the kind of ways that I worked when I was a photojournalist. And then talk a little bit about, you know, my journey into editing, show some of the work that I did in Denver, which really did prepare me to lead the department in Minneapolis, and then talk about the way that the Annunciation breaking news event was covered, and sort of go through the timeline, the way that we worked together, how different people were working, the roles that we had. I have a 4-page timeline of events of the things that happened during that day. And then the subsequent, you know, next 2 days. And then I want to talk a little bit about Operation Metro Surge, which is the ICE immigration enforcement coverage that we've been doing in Minneapolis, mostly over January and into February, and the ways that we worked in those situations. And I want to talk a little bit about how to work safely with sources, how to help, you know, make sure that you're minimizing harm when you are working with sources, and then also how to keep safe for yourself. So I'm going to focus a lot, especially in the later half of the presentation, on field safety, best practices, general just kind of information on how to work as safe as you can if you find yourself in one of these situations. Because as a person who spent their entire career in local news, that really wasn't part of my training. And I definitely had, both in the field and then as an editor at different points in time, felt caught off guard by like, oh my gosh, like I don't have training in how to cover combat or conflict. I don't know necessarily like how to deal with these like very militarized police situations or these like huge crowds. And so, I mean, for me, like safety has really become a personal passion. I really want to make sure that the people who we work with are able to work safely and that they can then in turn work safely with their sources.
My next article for the NPPA News Photographer magazine, as you know, is covering ICE and the safety and responsibility of it. And you are one of my sources. So I'm going to start that story next week. Mm-hmm. And thank you for agreeing to that. And I'm looking forward to hearing your remarks tonight. Anything else you'd like to ask her, Sue?
Minneapolis strong.
Absolutely. Thank you both for having me.
Thank you, and good luck with everything you're doing.
Thanks so much.
This concludes part one.